It's great to be back. And it's great to be back on Father's Day. Now, if you're my friend on Facebook, you'll know that last week we celebrated Father's Day. And in the middle of it, my daughter got a text at breakfast, which is her big flaw. Yeah, she had the phone under the table, and her friend texted her in response to her Father's Day greeting to say it was not Father's Day. So she then announced to the family that it was not Father's Day, and of course it was a very crazy moment. We had a friend over who was my mentee, and he had come over for breakfast for Father's Day. And he said, you know, my mom was wondering, what was this Father's Day thing? Because Father's Day is next week. But you guys were so into it that... So this is my second Father's Day. And I am now fully able to be totally magnanimous because I've had mine already. Well, I've been peeling away the onion of truth in my own life for all of my life. And I've gotten a few brief and disorienting glimpses recently at the core. But it is more than I can take. I find myself looking away because it's too bright. It burns my eyes. It's too void of the complexity of my obsessive mind, too transcendental for my mortal way of thinking. I've been on a journey trying to understand reality, and I've employed and explored the sociology of it, the psychology of it, the theology of it. And I'm no scholar, but I've tried my best. I've traveled thousands of miles and read thousands of pages, had a few thousand thoughts and ideas. And now I'm finding that the journey is within. And it's more than I can take. To believe that I am where I should be and that I have all that I need. It's just more than I can take. I'm like a man who digs for gold in pursuit of riches and things that gold can buy, and finds on his very own property, in his own backyard, a mine full of gold, so pure, so vast, and so rich that he no longer needs to buy anything. Because he can have anything he wants at any time. Now, what if there was that much gold in one man's hands? It would destroy the economy. There would be a disruption in the entire system of demand and supply. I guarantee you that the FBI, the CIA, the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Bank, the Common Commercial Banking System, Standard & Poor's, the guardians of the Dow Jones Industrial and the NASDAQ, they all would be at your door trying to negotiate, confiscate, and subordinate this bounty. The president and his entire cabinet would be there, trying to nationalize or militarize your assets. But on the more personal level, your family and friends would show up. Some would be trying to make your wealth the family's wealth. There would be arguments about who deserves or who gets more. There would be arguments about who deserves and who would be at the head of the line for your generosity. There would be all kinds of theories about family first and friends first. And if a few million in a lottery, in lottery winnings can destroy relationships, just imagine unimaginable wealth. That, my friends, is the problem with Christ in us today. And that is the reason we as individuals, our family, our groups, our ethnicities, as organizing principles, our professionals, and even our nationalities are being threatened by the real truth, the real gold. Now, back in Jesus' day, of course, they didn't show up at his door. They showed up in the garden where he was praying because he was disrupting the economy. He was disrupting the order of things. After trying vainly to domesticate him, to co-opt him, to contain his unlimited resources and who they were being doled out to, they finally decided to kill him, and then for many decades also his followers. Today, no such drastic action is required because as Christians, we have simply been sufficiently domesticated. They have capped off and sealed the vast mines of wealth buried in our very properties that threaten the economy and our social balance. They have captured us, and we have been domesticated and neutralized by our egos, our families, our theologies, and the world. We can no longer see the truth because we can no longer stand to look at the truth. It is more than we can take. We cannot face the reality that of the vast wealth around us. It is more than we can accept, partly because it threatens our small ideas of who we are, and because it threatens all the small people and systems we belong to. It defies our belonging systems, our economy, our theologies, our alliances, and it threatens all of these. So over and over again, we choose what my mentor, Richard Rohr, calls the small self. Now, I'm going to give you a glimpse earlier in the chapter that we read today, chapter 9, how this might apply to what was happening with Jesus, and why would he warn his disciples after such great things happening and sending them out that they're going to be persecuted by governments and governors and synagogues, and then that their families are going to turn against one another, and family members, sons and daughters against parents, and vice versa, and brothers against brothers. How in the midst of all of this bounty and generosity and the kingdom spilling over would these things happen? And why don't they happen today? Jesus stepped out of a boat, and this is in verse 1 of chapter 9, and crossed over and came to his own town. Some men brought to him a paralyzed man lying on a mat, and when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the man, "Take heart, son, your sins are forgiven." At this, some of the teachers of the law said to themselves, "This fellow is blaspheming." Knowing their thoughts, Jesus said, "Why do you entertain evil thoughts in your hearts? Which is easier to say, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or to say, 'Get up and walk'? But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins." So he said to the paralyzed man, "Get up, take your mat, and go home." Then the man got up and went home. And when the crowd saw this, they were filled with awe. And listen to this now. And they praised God who had given such authority to man. Let me repeat that. They praised God who had given such authority to man. Now, Jesus had healed a lot of people before this. I would like to suggest it was his capacity, his audacity to forgive the man's sins that was so amazing, that made his healing so amazing. Well, that upset the leaders, and we know eventually what would happen. And when Jesus sends his disciples out to spread the same message, therefore, he warned them. What they were doing was so threatening because such authority had been given to them to heal and to forgive sins. To be in touch with a larger reality of a God who knew no boundaries of class, distinctions of sex and race. That's what Jesus really turned the tables. It was not so much that he healed, it was who he healed. On Friday, two big trials came back from the jury with unsatisfactory decisions for people locally and nationally. In one case, the police officer who killed Philando Castile was found not guilty on all charges. The community was shocked that this incident could not generate a conviction. Not even of murder, but second-degree manslaughter, even though we got the raw, unedited, and thoroughly damning live streaming immediately after the shooting from his girlfriend, Diamond Reynolds. Diamond articulately stated, "It's a sad state of affairs when this type of criminal conduct is conducted simply because Yanez is a policeman. God help America." In the other case, the ultimate celebrity, Bill Cosby, got a hung jury in his case of rape, even though 58 women came forward, about 9 of them in court, to testify that for decades Cosby had drugged, raped, abused each of them with impunity. Camille Cosby has since issued a scathing written rebuke of the women, the judge, the prosecutors, and all who participated in Cosby's accusation. Andrea Constant's attorney, Gloria Aldred, made a statement outside the courtroom. She said, "We can never underestimate the blinding power of celebrity." She might as well have said and concluded, as Diamond Reynolds had, "God help America." You see, it's not just in Jesus' day, but today we are also full of prejudices and presuppositions that harm people and destroy lives. In both cases, there were both sympathetic and personal reasons for what appeared to be legally sound but unjust outcomes. First, in the reality that power has amassed for itself over time a disproportionate influence over our laws. Men have managed to dominate the outcome of justice in our favor over centuries in most societies. Some of the most heinous crimes against women have been gone unpunished. And we have kept women from the vote, from owning property, from power over their bodies, and from justice when that power is violated. But there are also personal factors in play. Camille Cosby's stout defense of her husband, Felicia Rashad, Mrs. Huxtable, and other fellow stars' inability to disengage themselves and disentangle themselves from the flattery and prosperity they gained in relationship with Cosby. These pressures just overwhelm the testimonies, the well-being, the dignity, and the mental health of 58 women who we know of, and the dozens who have not come forward. Then in the Philando case, we know that over time, law enforcement has also been able to gain political advantage and establish such favorable laws and insulations against accountability that in spite of hundreds of black men and women being killed and brown people being killed by white officers and other officers, including the recent Eric Gardner, Michael Brown, 12-year-old Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray, and Philando. Few get charged, and fewer get punished. But there's also the personal. Good cops, while being good, sometimes see bad cops being bad, but you will never or seldom, if ever, see a witness for the prosecution be another cop. The price is too high. His relationship with the blue tribe will be in jeopardy, and his life depends on being able to depend on his fellow cops. So black men must go down. So when Jesus comes along at a time and a place where culture has already defined the comparative value of human beings as to who's valuable and who's not, when theology has established who's a sinner and who's a saint and who's in and who's out and who's forgivable and who's not, whose dignity must be defended at all costs and whose suffering is deserved, when Jesus enters that society and begins to hand out equal indulgence, equal grace, equal inclusion without any permission or dispensation from the gatekeepers of the economy, the faith, or the government, he had to go down. Now, let me tell you a little more personal story. About 2 months ago or so, my family email with 10 siblings got jacked up by the eldest sibling, who was not my mom's son, but my dad's son before they got married. And he has been to family reunions over the years. He's about 5 years older than my eldest nuclear family sibling, and he knows and understands my dad from a totally different perspective. Absent dad, being raised by his aunts, my dad's sisters, who didn't get the money that should be coming to them all the time, while my dad was having a whole bunch of other kids, 10. Being neglected by a dad who was always there for us, and understanding my dad from a basic perspective of sexual promiscuity and irresponsibility. And so he shared a few of those thoughts. You could hear a pin drop on the internet. And the pin is still yet to drop. Well, actually, a couple people came on and chastised him for discrediting the dead, who could not no longer defend himself. That's my dad. And so he just clammed up. So he's in London, so I said, I'm going to London to hear what this guy has to say. So I just got back a week ago and heard some jaw-dropping facts about my dad. Just the truth. Now, those facts or perceptions were buried for 76 years. That's how old my brother is. He has sucked it up and come to every family reunion and participated in Dad the Good Old Guy tales and myth. And finally he decided he's got to say something. And he got shut down. I tell you this story because Jesus warns his disciples that you're going to get systemic pushback and you're going to get family pushback when you speak the truth. Or when you defend those who speak the truth. There is no need to feel that there is no work to be done. Every day on your job, every day in your home, every day in conversations with your friends, justice is being violated and denied. And we must take it on at home, and we must take it on in the streets. That's the work we have to do, to set the captive free. Jesus looked at the crowd of people and saw them, and he had pity on them because they were harassed and helpless. These are the people he sent his disciples out to set free with the good news. That's the challenge we have today. I've peeled back the layers of the onion, and that is what I see. That we must let go off of our alliances, our belonging systems, whether it be whiteness, blackness, Episcopalianism, Lutheranism, Minnesotanism, Americanism, Asianism, sexism. We must let go off our labels and embrace the divine cosmic humanity with which we are all endowed. And when the bell tolls, don't ask for whom it tolls. It tolls for you. Pick up your neighbor's burden. Pick up your brother's and your sister's pain. Don't let justice go unaddressed. This is a beautiful task we have. In your very backyard is buried a treasure trove of gold. It is called truth. It is called justice. Spend it liberally. Buy the slave and set him free. Feed your neighbor. Love one another. It's the great commandment. We can change the world. We've just gotten small in our perception of what God asks of us. Let's grow again. Let's expand again. Let's transform the world again. Let's turn Minnesota upside down, like the early Christians did in Jerusalem, in just a few months and years. We can do it. It's our turn. God bless you.